This week's episode is also brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a better, more transparent experience while purchasing tickets to your favorite team's sporting events. SeatGeek also has a price match guarantee, and the only thing it can't guarantee is your favorite team winning, especially if it's our case scenario because we're Rutgers fans, and that doesn't really happen often. So go over to SeatGeek, use code CFBTD at checkout for $20 off your first purchase. Again, that's CFBTD at checkout for $20 off your first purchase. California, welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by CFB Talk Daily. Today is Tuesday, May 14th. We have a pretty packed schedule going on today. We're going to do our Pac-12 North review. We're bringing in special guest Max Torres. He's a writer over at Scoop Ducks, knowledgeable guy. So we're actually going to jump right on into that because we've got a lot of good things to say. We don't want to hold up too much of your day, so here we go.
All right, so before we get into our Pac-12 previews, we have a special guest on the show, Max Torres. He's a writer out in Oregon. He has, knows a lot of stuff, so we figured bring him on. Max, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much for having me, guys. Excited to get into it.
So we'll let you start it off since you're the guest here, and we'll start up with your specialty with Oregon.
Yeah, for sure. So for Oregon this upcoming year, they have a lot of high expectations, I think, within the Pac-12 and, you know, nationwide, trying to get back to the playoff potentially. I have them going at 10-2, which isn't the perfect record to get back to the playoff. But those two losses, I have them losing potentially to Arizona State. I think because Jaden Daniels is probably going to win the starting job there, and that might present problems for their defense. And then losing to one of the Washington schools because the Washington defense is usually pretty strong, and I feel like Wazoo's just had their number with the whole air raid offense that Mike Leach has over there.
Yeah, I have them at actually the same record, 10-2. I have them losing to Washington and Stanford. You know, Herbert comes back, obviously, is the biggest, probably their biggest bring back, including recruits coming in. This Herbert needs to work on. He was only 59% last year completed passes, so obviously that's something he needs to work on. Receivers, a lot of them come back, minus Dylan Mitchell, and then the running backs are coming back, and they have a 5-star line, so I think 10-2 is very achievable. But with the Washington Stanford game, I think Washington, like you said, has had their number consistently the last couple years, and Stanford's just one of those teams that when you play Stanford, they're going to give you fits.
Yeah, go for it.
I think that before we talked, I had them at 12-0, and then I thought about it.
No, man, that's a rough one right there.
Well, I wish. Thought about it, and I didn't see that Washington game was on the road, so I changed it to 11-1. I have them losing to Washington, and I think maybe there's a chance they drop the first game against Auburn, because, I mean, Auburn is good. They're an SEC team. Their pass rush is good, and Oregon's receivers are very young, and Auburn has a very experienced secondary.
I think one thing with that game that helps Oregon is that's a Jerry's World. That's a neutral game, right?
Yeah,
so it's not like you're going into Auburn.
The thing with Oregon for me, yeah, their receivers are good. They're highly talented. I actually have them at 11-1 with their only loss coming to Washington, because going into Washington, that high-powered offense right there, it's going to be a tough situation to go on the road and try to beat them. I had one as a toss-up, hosting Colorado. I gave them the win in that one, but that one for me could go either way.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to say about Auburn real quick, if I may, is while that is a neutral site game, I think one of the biggest things that Oregon struggled with last year was playing away from Eugene, bottom line. Even when they played in Santa Clara for the Red Box Bowl, they really struggled. So I think them solving those road woes, which for all intents and purposes, I'm going to look at this Auburn game as a road game, that's going to be something huge in determining how they end up playing the season.
Yeah, especially with big games on the road like Washington.
Another big thing with Auburn, though, they lose their quarterback. You know,
yeah, they don't have anyone really right
now. Their quarterback situation coming in is a big question mark for me and probably for the rest of the SEC right now. Who's going to be under center or in their shotgun? Because I know Stidham's gone. I don't know who's replacing him.
Who's that? I know his name. Bo Nix.
Bo Nix.
All right, so Max, before we move on to another team, I just want to ask, who do you think is the biggest addition Oregon made in the offseason, whether it be a recruit or a transfer?
Wow, okay, great question. I think – I want to say Andy Avalos is the – oh, wait, sorry, that's the coach, my bad. I think recruit, I want to say Kayvon Thibodeau. I feel like that's really – basic to say because he's a five-star recruit, but this the highest recruit that Oregon's essentially ever landed, and I think he's going to come in and play right away and really help get pressure on quarterbacks, which is something that Oregon hasn't totally been known for in the past. And Andy Avalos' defense is really going to be kind of known for pressuring the quarterback and giving multiple looks, and I think he's going to be that pressure that Oregon needs on the defense.
I got one question for you, Max. What do you think Juwan Johnson's going to be? The big Penn State transfer. He had a lot of like key drops at Penn State, but he also had a lot of key catches. What do you think his production is going to be like?
A lot about drops.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Oregon did struggle as a group with drops last year, as did Juwan Johnson. But I think this is one of the most athletic receivers that Oregon has seen in recent years, and he's going to be a great safety blanket, I think, for Herbert to just toss it up to in the red zone, kind of like we saw in the spring game. With his touchdown throw to Juwan. So they're already developing that chemistry, and he hasn't even been there that long. So I think he's going to have a really good season and be a key part of this offense.
All right, so moving on to Washington. Matt, you want to start this one off?
Yeah, I'll start it off. Obviously, the big thing with Washington this year, Jacob Eason coming in, starting a quarterback. When I think of Eason, I think of the throw he made at Tennessee. 2 years ago, I guess it was, 50-yard pass, corner end zone between the corner and a safety. Just a stupidly good throw. But they get three starting receivers back as well as their tight end. Salvon Ahmed is going to take over at running back this year. The defense does lose talent, but, Jimmy Lake does a very good job of bringing back talent, like refilling talent. I think they have a good shot at winning the North this year, especially if they beat Oregon, which I had them beating Oregon. But I, again, have them at 10-2 with upsets to Colorado or upsets from Colorado and Arizona.
Man, you guys love Colorado.
That's what I have. I have 11-1 with a loss to Colorado. I originally had them at 12-0 heading into the playoff. But I don't know. Colorado just... they're just a sneaky team. You're never really going to know who's going to come and who's going to show up, especially since they're in Colorado, that game.
All right, so Max, what do you have for Washington?
Yeah, Washington was a little tricky for me. I have them at 9-3, which might be a little harsh. But I feel like since Chris Peterson has come in, Washington has really established them as more of like a Stanford-esque team, insofar as they're like one of those teams that is always kind of going to give you fits, or they're always going to be solid. Like you guys touched on, they had a lot of people on that defense leave for the NFL. Miles Gaskin's gone. He almost didn't get drafted. And I saw that, from what I've heard, Jacob Eason didn't have the strongest spring. So I think they'll definitely be someone to keep an eye on, but definitely one of the top contenders in the North for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I have them at 10-2, and I have them losing to Stanford and Oregon. I think Jacob Eason is going to make the transition from losing Jacob Browning a lot easier. But I also think that losing Ben Burkervin is going to hurt them a lot with their linebackers, because he just gave every team fits.
I just want to make one thing, because you just talked about Browning. And when at the end of the season last year, I saw a lot of posts on Reddit from Washington fans who like absolutely hated him. And like, when I think of Browning, I thought he wasn't a quarterback that was going to win you a lot of games by like his over athleticism or super powerful arm. But I also thought he was a very good quarterback that he wasn't going to lose you a lot of games.
He was very usable, like he would stand strong in the pocket and he would deliver a strong ball over the field. He wasn't necessarily the most clutch guy in the world, but he was going to win you games.
Yeah, like that's why I thought that was kind of weird.
Max, what do you think of Browning?
Yeah, Browning, I feel like a lot of people were kind of seeing him as a system quarterback. I don't know all the guys' names just yet by voice, but like we said, he'll win you games. I think he exited the Pac-12 as the winningest quarterback in conference history, I believe. But we saw, especially against Oregon, if you can get pressure on him and, you know, get a lot of hits on him, you can rattle him and, you know, force some bad throws. But he's also got decent pocket mobility. So I think he can kind of make it happen. He's good at improvising.
Yeah, I think the thing with Washington fans is after they lost John Ross and Dante Pettis, his production just, like, kind of went down a lot. So I think people thought, like, maybe having two NFL receivers for a few years made him a lot better, which should make every quarterback better.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump in. Let's stay in the state of Washington for the next one. We're going to go Washington State up for grabs. Who wants to start it?
I'll take it. You want John or you want me?
I'll start it. All right, so I have Washington State. Now, I'm a big Mike Leach guy. Also, you guys all know that he doesn't use a playbook, right?
Yeah,
I did not know that, but I'm not surprised now.
yeah, when he was at Texas Tech, someone asked him, they were like, how do you get the guys to read the playbook? And he said, what playbook? And they were like, what do you mean? Like, the offensive one. And he goes, they wouldn't read it anyway.
So, oh, my God.
So I'm a little biased because I love him. But I have him at 9-3. And I have him losing to Washington, Oregon, and Stanford.
I think replacing Minshew is a very, very big job. They do return four big receivers, but they lose a lot on defense. I think that this year they take a step back. So I have them at 500, 6-6, losing to Utah, Colorado, Oregon, Stanford, Washington, and Cal.
Yeah, I have them at 6-6 as well. Losing Minshew is never easy, especially how much of a veteran he was, considering I feel like he's been in the NCAA for at least 10 years.
That's because your book's that old, that's all.
Exactly. But I have them losing to Houston, UCLA, Colorado, Oregon, Stanford, and Washington.
Oh, my God. All right, Max, what do you think about Washington State?
Yeah, Washington State. I have them at 7-5. Like everyone's mentioned, answering who's next after Gardner Minshew is going to be really big. But I think I saw the other day, like for bold record predictions, stat predictions, they're going to have whoever Mike Leach throws in there, you know he's going to rack up the yards and keep this offense moving. That's kind of what the team goes off of. I have the O-line loses one starter and Andre Dillard, who went in the draft this year, but they do return some receivers like Jameer Calvin, who had a really good freshman season. So I think it's really just rest on the shoulders of who they get at quarterback, and I think he'll be the one that ultimately determines their outcome of the season.
Yeah, just a quick thing. I don't know what it is, but, like, I hate seeing Washington do good. But, like, Washington State, I'm just like, maybe it's because of the big Mike Leach guy.
You're an Oregon fan, too. You like Oregon. Why would, like, it's like me seeing Ohio State do good. I hate to see Ohio State do well.
Yeah, but they're still in the same division.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. All right, so on to Stanford. And, Mike, you want to start this one?
Stanford, yeah, I'll take it. So, with Stanford, I'm not seeing a big season. They lose Bryce Love in the backfield, which is never an easy task. I have them at 500. I have them at 6-6 with losses coming to Northwestern, UCF, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and Notre Dame at the end of the season.
All right. For Stanford, I have them at 9-3. I have them actually losing to UCF, which some people may find shocking. But I think Brandon Wimbush is going to make Mackenzie Milton being out for the year not as big of a loss as many people think. I have them losing to Oregon, and I have them losing to Notre Dame. Because I think KJ Costello is enough to where he can make the guys around him better, and you won't see too much of a drop-off.
Max, what do you got? I'll let you go before I start her up.
Yeah, for sure. I also have Stanford at 9-3. I think their game against UW will be pretty close. But like I said earlier, Stanford, they're that team that can kind of really get it done, and they're always really solid. I don't think they're going to get blown out in any games this year. David Shaw keeps them in it. And I think Notre Dame's going to be on a mission this year after getting absolutely embarrassed by Clemson in the playoffs. KJ Costello returns, which is your biggest, your biggest position of need or of importance. And Walker Little's back. Their offensive line's a strength. but you do lose a lot of playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, like Bryce Love and Arcega-Whiteside. So that's kind of where I have them at. I think they'll be solid, but I think the North will come down to Oregon and either Washington or Stanford.
Yeah, Oregon should have won that game last year. Just
I was at that game. It was a heartbreak. You were at that game? I think once I saw the ball go over Herbert's head at like the 2 yard line, and then they scooped and scored, I was like, "All right, this is actually happening. We might lose this game."
But I had Stanford basically same exact thing Max already said. You know, Costello coming back, Love's gone, Arcega-Whiteside also gone, but they also lose Keaton Smith, tight end. He's also gone. But I also have them at 9-3. I've been losing to Notre Dame, Northwestern, and Central Florida. But like you said, they're always well coached. So I don't think they're going to be a team that's going to get blown out. They're going to play in a lot of close games. Obviously, have them winning the Oregon game, but I think 9-3 is probably the ceiling for them.
All right. So for Cal, who wants to start this one?
Max, you want to start off Cal?
Yeah, for sure. Cal, really interesting. I think I have them at 7-5. I think they need to figure out their QB situation, like a lot of teams in the Pac-12, it seems like. They're either going with Chase Garbers or Devin Monster, who's the UCLA transfer. We saw that defense was their strength last year. They held teams to 20.4 points a game, and they led the Pac-12 in yards allowed per play with 4.6. So I think they've progressed a lot as a team since Justin Wilcox, the former Oregon coach, took over there. They have a lot of tough road games on their schedule. But I think if they can figure out their quarterback and get a relatively solid offensive foundation, I think that they'll be able to shock some people this year.
Yeah, the one thing I've written down for Cal, or actually it's majority of the points, actually is their defense. Like you mentioned, a little over 20 points a game. The defense is definitely their strong point. Evan Weaver's coming back. He's probably one of the better players in the conference. So I have them 6-6, losing to Washington. Ole Miss is a tough game for them, obviously. But Ole Miss is a high offense, but they really don't play defense. So that could actually be a coin flip. Arizona State, Oregon, Utah, and Stanford. So I have them 6-6, 7-5, somewhere around there.
I mean, for like Max said, it seems like all the teams that we've covered in the Pac-12, other than Oregon, really doesn't know their quarterback situation right now.
Which bodes really well for Oregon.
Exactly. Yeah. It goes extremely well for Oregon. That's why I had them at 11-1. But for Cal, I have them around 5-7, with losses coming to Washington, Ole Miss, Oregon State, Utah, oof, USC, and Stanford. So I think Oregon State on the road would actually take that one. It's a coin flip for me.
You have Oregon State beating someone?
I have Oregon State beating Cal, yeah.
That's interesting.
Wow.
I have Cal at 4-8. They don't beat a lot of people, and I have them losing to North Texas.
Really?
As an upset.
North Texas has a good quarterback.
They lost their OC, though. They lost Graham Harrell. Can they still get it done?
North Texas lost to Rutgers. Remember that. North Texas stinks. They lost to Rutgers.
Yeah, Graham Harrell's in the OC at USC.
That was Texas State. North Texas didn't play Rutgers last year.
Oh, that's an
idiot. They get boomed.
That's a brain fart.
Oh, but North Texas has a very good quarterback. I think his name is Mason Fine.
Yeah, it's Mason Fine. Did Graham Harrell go to USC? Ones. He did, right?
Yeah, he's in the OC over there trying to get the air raid offense going.
I just remember that. All right, so now we get to the Rutgers of the Pac-12. Oregon State Beavers. I'll start this one off because you guys are probably going to like this. They are 1-11.
Me too. I have the same thing.
I have their only win being Cal Poly.
Yep.
I don't really have much to say about them, although their running back, Jamar Jefferson, was very good last year. I don't think he'll be enough to carry that offense to even be serviceable, but that's pretty much all I got to say about them.
So when I was reading about them, their defense allowed almost 40 points a game in the last two seasons, and obviously that's terrible unless your offense is scoring 50 points. And one of the things they had was Addison Gums is an Oklahoma transfer and Avery Roberts is a Nebraska transfer. And it said, you know, they could potentially help a defense. Like, the defense stinks. They would need a lot of help. So I have them 1-11 with the win against Cal Poly.
Yeah, for Oregon State, I have they beat Cal Poly and they beat Cal. So they're 2-10. The only good thing about Oregon State is their baseball team. Oregon State football stinks.
So you're saying if Oregon State played all their games against Cal teams, they'd win every one?
No, not UCLA.
Or USC. Or Stanford.
Okay.
Or yeah, Fresno State, San Jose State.
To wrap up the Beavers here, the rival team, one of the two rival teams, I have them at 2-10, beating Cal Poly and Hawaii, which is maybe a coin flip. I don't know too much about Hawaii. I just know that they're one of the non-conference teams, and that's usually Oregon State's best chance at winning. Like you guys said, Jamar Jefferson's an absolute baller. They have some key transfers coming in. One that didn't get mentioned was Tyjon Lindsey, the Nebraska receiver, who was at one point an Oregon target. And people thought he was going to go to Oregon and be the next DeAnthony Thomas. He was just super electric in high school. So I think he could potentially help the Oregon State offense get moving in the right direction and provide the spark they need. So they have a lot of key transfers here, but I'm not totally ready to hop on board until I see how they perform once they get to Corvallis.
I also forgot that. I mean, just a little thing about Jamar Jefferson. He was Rutgers' top running back target last 2 years ago. Was he in the recruiting class?
I couldn't tell you. I'm not sure. My head.
Yeah. But his high school quarterback went to Rutgers, and he was trying to get him to go, and he wouldn't go with him.
Because it's Rutgers.
Well, he went to Oregon State. It's not much better.
Yeah, he might as well just stay at home at Rutgers.
That's true.
Or stay and go, or just go to Rutgers in general.
All right, so that wraps up the Pac-12 North. This is Max. We're going to have him back next week to talk about the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, well, I had a bunch of fun talking about the North. Looks like my Ducks are poised to do pretty well, but I think it'll be an interesting year to see how all these quarterback situations unfold, and I'm looking forward to watching it.
All right, Max, thanks for coming on. We'll have you back on next week to talk about the South with us if you're around.
All right, sounds good.
All right, so now we're going to jump right into follower questions. We're going to start right off with probably one of the best questions we've ever actually gotten. If you had a 4-star or 5-star kid and he has to pick from any college program to choose from and he asks for your counsel, where would you advise him to go and why? Mike, you want to start this off?
No, I want to start.
Okay, John, take it.
All right, so I would tell my kid to go to Ohio State because of the player development. Or if he was a quarterback, I would tell him to choose NC State because the Wolfpack gets quarterbacks into the NFL. See Russell Wilson, Phillip Rivers, Jacoby Brissett, and Ryan Finley.
Yeah, they do a very good job. Yeah, Mike, you can go.
If you're talking about getting quarterbacks to the NFL, you're skipping over one of the biggest ones, Clemson. Because we're already projecting Trevor Lawrence to be probably the first overall pick. Can we all agree on that? When he goes to the draft, he's going to be the first overall pick. And you had Deshaun Watson right before him. And if you look in the NFL, he's doing pretty damn good, isn't he? And then Taj Boyd wasn't that bad in college. He was actually phenomenal in college.
Well, he was throwing to DeAndre Hopkins and Sammy Watkins.
Well, yeah, but even then, he didn't transfer that well to the NFL. But being at Clemson, they're doing really well. For me, if you're a running back, I know I'm biased, but Penn State. Penn State looks like they're dishing out running backs right now after Barkley and Sanders. Two running backs, back-to-back years in the first two rounds. Two running backs come off the board in the first two rounds. So you're looking at a new running back, you.
This isn't my answer, but I'm just saying it because you just said the Penn State was running back, you. I think Wisconsin still is running back university. Especially the last couple years. But my answer, I would tell them either Alabama or Clemson, because with Alabama, you're always going to be on the big stage. You're always going to be the late night TV game, like the SEC game of the week. Clemson, especially right now, you're going to have a chance to play for a national championship, and that's going to be some good exposure. So those are my two choices. Especially you got coaches. You got Saban and Dabo. They're both two of the best in the business.
Yeah, that's also true with Alabama, too, because if you heard Quinnen Williams' interview, his first press conference interview at the Jets training camp, he even said going into that season, he didn't even know if he was going to start.
Yeah, you're going to get pushed.
Well, that's because they get so many.
Yeah, that's what. Then he won the starting job, and he basically only started for a year because the year before he was just a fill-in guy. So last year he got the full-time gig, and he went number 3 in the draft.
They're
pushing out guys. They're pushing out the guys on defense left and right. So if you're a top-tier defender, go to Alabama, man.
Hmm. You're wrong.
How? Tell me how I'm wrong.
Because if you get hurt or you fall behind on the depth chart in Alabama, good luck climbing back up. Hello, transfer portal.
That's why the transfer portal is such a beautiful thing. That's why we love
it. Oh, man, you're going to get killed on Twitter. You called the transfer portal a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's not great.
If something doesn't work out for you, then go in the transfer portal.
Yeah, but like people get all bent out of shape when you transfer. Yeah, all right, so our next
everyone's
question
being
is,
bent out of shape.
Who are the top 10 quarterbacks currently in college football?
I'll start it off because I'm pretty sure mine and John's list is probably going to be pretty similar. These are not in any order. So, John, just tell me if they're on your list while I do it so you just don't repeat them. Herbert, this is not in any order again. So, Herbert, Lawrence, Jacob Eason.
Nope.
Jalen Hurts.
Yep.
Tua.
Yep.
Cole McDonald.
Yep.
Fromm.
Yes.
Ian Book.
Yes.
Adrian Martinez.
Nope.
Mason Fine.
Nope. So mine are in order. I have Trevor Lawrence at 1, mm-hmm. Justin Herbert at 2, Tua at 3, Jake Fromm at 4, Jalen Hurts at 5, a healthy Mackenzie Milton at 6, Sam Ellinger at 7, Shea Patterson at 8, Ian Book at 9, and Cole McDonald at 10.
Okay. I mean, I guess we can all agree there's like a couple guys that can go either way. For me, in no order, I got Jake Fromm, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, Herbert, Hurts, a healthy Mackenzie Milton, Sam Ellinger, Shea Patterson. I threw my boy Sean Clifford in there. Joe Burrow, and yeah, I mean, I like Joe Burrow. He's a pocket passer. He's just on an offense that can't really score that well. But I think he's going to transfer over pretty well.
Okay. Burrow is an interesting one. I just think playing in the SEC is a very hard place to improve as quarterback.
Exactly. Yeah,
I thought about Burrow too, but I don't know. He never really sold me that much.
Burrow is strong in the pocket, but
Does he have a rocket arm?
He's going to have to move. He's got to move out of the pocket. He's got to have to move out of the pocket.
He's got to move.
He's gonna learn how to move better.
All right. So with Florida State hiring Kendall Briles, do you think the offense takes a massive jump from last season? John?
I think no, I don't. I think they get worse.
They don't have a quarterback.
Losing DeAndre Francois, yeah, we broke that news. Credit CFB Talk Daily on the videos that are surfacing. You can see my Instagram video on the bottom, like my Instagram profile picture and all the videos. I think their program doesn't have stability right now. I mean, they're not as bad as the University of Florida, but they're pretty bad right now.
Oh, you know what's an all-time tough that I just realized?
What?
On last week's episode, I predicted University of Florida to have the best season of all the teams in Florida, and now that's completely gone to shambles.
And you didn't even mention Miami either.
Yeah, well, they weren't in contention anyways.
Now they are.
They're still not.
I bump Florida out and throw Miami in now.
No way. Miami stinks. Mike, what do you think about Kendall Briles?
Let me ask you this. Who's their quarterback?
Exactly.
That's the simple answer. If you don't have a quarterback, it doesn't matter who's your running back. It doesn't matter who's your wide receivers are. If you don't have a solid play caller, you're not going to win football games. So until they get that quarterback in there to be sustainable, you're not going to do much.
All right, so let's jump into the next question. And
why don't you read it?
I'm going to sit this one out. Is Texas back?
All right, so with this question, I'm going to defer to Lind.
And I'm going to defer this one right back to you because this is over and done with.
All right, so we're skipping this one. Although the answer is yes, they're national championship contenders. No. Someone said, do you think Jacob Eason could lead Washington past Herbert and Oregon for the Pac-12 North? I think it's possible, but I think Washington lost a lot of defensive talent, and Eason's still a question mark, and Oregon got much better. So I don't think so.
If you listened carefully to our Pac-12 North review, I think that it's very possible. I actually have them winning the North, so I do have them beating beating Herbert at home. Well, wait, is that game home or is that away?
It's home for Washington.
Yeah, so I do have them beating Oregon at home to win the North. I don't know if they'll win the entire Pac-12. I would think whoever wins the North wins the Pac-12 outright. That's my short. That's pretty much my answer for that one.
I mean, for me with Jacob Eason, he had a year to sit behind Jake Browning. He had a year to learn the offense in full. So I think if you listen carefully before, I have them at 11-1 and even possibly going 12-0. I think Eason can lead this team to not only the Pac-12 North win, but possibly to a college football playoff. Eason, if he can get on the right track, he can be the streakiest player in the world and can just deliver balls nonstop, and then we could be talking about him possibly going to the draft.
I really like Eason. I mean, I've said it before. I just like I think of Eason, I think of his freshman year. He made a beautiful pass at the end of the Tennessee game. That's the only play I think of with him, and that was an NFL pass. So
if you want to think of a dime above pass, that is the pass.
Yeah, I just think of him. So if he can go back to forms like that, I think that Washington could get in. I don't think the committee loves the Pac-12.
No, they never do.
I think everyone just hates Larry Scott.
Yeah.
He'd be fired.
That 1 year sitting behind Browning, learning the offense, it can pay its dividends. So it's kind of like the whole NFL model with Pat Mahomes right now. He sat for a year, and now look at him. This could be similar to what Eason can do. We just got to see if he can do it.
All right. So our next question is, why is paying college athletes a good or bad idea?
Oh boy. All right. So I don't even know how to start this because it's a good idea, but I don't think it can work and I don't think it'll ever work. And I'm a former college athlete, so I speak from perspective of knowing what it's like. I didn't play in an SEC schedule. I didn't have to grind that, but no, I understand like the grind that comes with it, the time you give up, but I don't think that mid-major schools would be able to keep up with the Power Five schools, and I wouldn't think that it would be fair for revenue to be spread out evenly amongst schools so that a mid-major school is getting the same amount of profit share as a team like Ohio State who sells that game. So I don't think it'll ever work. So I think right now with the way that it's quote unquote not paying players where guys are getting paid illegally, I think that that's kind of the best way it'll work. I think that's the only way it'll work. I could go on for forever with this. So
I'm gonna make this one short because this is a long episode already, and this is like a big whole can of worms. I think in theory it's a good idea to pay them more because in college I remember Jabril Peppers complained about practicing three times a day and barely getting to eat. But I think that it's just not plausible to pay them with the regulations like Title X right now.
Here would be my question to Jabril Peppers. How was he not eating? Because Division I, I think actually all college football players, I think actually all college athletes are given unlimited meal plan cards.
I don't think they are.
I don't know.
The big time schools.
You can't give one to it, not the other. I think all schools have it. Let me look this up. Well, two talk. I'm gonna look it up.
For me, when you pay college athletes, I think essentially when you break it down, they are getting paid. They're getting paid if they're on full scholarship. They're on full scholarship. Their tuition's paid for. Their rooming is paid for. Their food is paid for. How many sponsorships they have, like in the school, all the free equipment they get. The take Oregon for example. How many jerseys does Oregon have? Five.
A lot.
Six. Maybe seven.
They don't wear the same jersey more than once.
Exactly. So these guys are getting different jerseys almost every game. So, and all the practice attire, the cleats, the socks, the jerseys, the sweatshirts, the t-shirts, the shorts, Under Armors.
You going to name everything? The socks?
The underwear.
Doesn't matter. Anything you can think of, these guys are getting. So just because they're not getting an extra couple bucks on the side because they're college athletes, but when you break it down based on tuition and being an actual college kid, they're getting a lot of free stuff, and that is their payment.
All right, so I have two things real quick. One, going back to the meal thing. 2014, student-athletes, walk-ons, those on scholarships can receive unlimited meals and snacks in conjunction with their athletic participation. Previously, student-athletes received 3 meals a day or a food stipend, and that was in April of 14. So that has been in effect for a couple years. So Peppers was in school while that was happening, so I'm not sure why he wasn't eating. But, like, this is the one thing I will say, and you can end it on this or not, I don't care. As a college athlete, like, I would say, you know, majority of college athletes, like in football, so majority of college football players don't go on to the NFL. It's not an appealing number. So it's not like 80%. So if you're like the second or third best receiver on your team, even if you're like in a mid-major team, I have no problem with you being able to sponsor yourself. You know, this is your 4-year stretch where you're the most presentable. So you can, you know, if you want to sell jerseys at the school, if sponsors want to come in and sponsor you and pay you independently outside of the school, I'd have no problem with that. I think that players should be able to advertise themselves. I think they should be able to, you know, do anything where they can make money, but I don't think the schools should be paying them directly.
Okay, so here's the thing with that NCAA thing. You're allowed to have unlimited snacks during training tables and the actual season. So after the college football regular season, they don't have a meal plan.
Don't forget about the cream cheese rule.
What's that?
The what?
So supposedly there was a rule. I don't know how true it is. But in the NCAA, you are not allowed to get free cream cheese on a bagel. I don't know if it's just a rumor or a truth, but somewhere in there, you're allowed to get the bagel. You're allowed to get butter. But you can't get cream cheese.
I don't know. I find that hard to believe that it's, the...
know if it's a rumor, but I find it hysterical. That, if it's true, it's that, the funniest thing ever.
I would find it hard to believe that the NCAA is drawing the line in the dairy section.
You never know. The NCAA is very weird. And they are supposedly nonprofit, but we're not getting into that.
All right, so our next question we have here is, which group of current college football coaches could we turn to become the Avengers if we need them to team up and save the world?
This is a fun question.
I like this one.
Yeah, me too.
All right, I'll start us off. Just imagine a world that needs help, needs some superheroes, and the doors open for the superheroes to emerge out. And it's Coach O. Nick Saban with a robotic hip, because he just got a new one. Dabo Sweeney. And Mike Leach with the fake mustache on.
Wow. Our list is so similar, dude.
I figured it would be.
So I have, in a world full of crime, Nick Saban, Mike Leach, Dino Babers, and Steve Adazio, and Coach O. Because I want some guys being
Steve Adazio.
I want some true grit with Coach O.
You got to have, because Coach O is the Hulk.
Well, just, I mean, even if they lose all their superpowers, Coach O could just, like, yell at them to death.
Yeah, he could just be great. And, like, if it came down to a gumbo eating contest, Coach O
man is winning. Gumbo cooking one
time. Oh, my gosh, I'm gumbo.
So, for me, if you need to save the world, you're going with Saban, you're going with Dabo, you're going with Coach O, and you're going with James Franklin.
I hate James Franklin.
James Franklin, so, big James Franklin fan. He turned that program around, so let's keep it going.
So with James Franklin, you might be able to like almost beat them, And then just like right as you're about to beat them, he's gonna make a stupid decision and you're last.
He's gonna draw fourth and five. Yeah. Draw after three timeouts.
Yeah, exactly.
I was at work, and I stopped working, and I didn't work for the next 2 hours. I sat in the back, and I was pissed off at the world.
I hope a future employer doesn't hear this.
It does not. James Frank, right. Don't disappoint me again. Never do that again.
Next question is, who is the quickest slash fastest team in the country, top to bottom at all positions? John, you can pretty much just run with this one because I think we have the same answer.
I like the pun right there too. I like the pun.
I did your research for you because you're too lazy to do it, and I have.
Oof, put me on blast.
Being one of the, I was putting you on blast.
Say that team again.
No, putting me on blast. Again. I know.
I have Ohio State because I think their receivers, they have some of the fastest receivers in the country. Their DBs are insanely fast. I mean, they're always very fast. And then I have UCF because their team is basically built on speed. And then I also have Penn State.
Let's go.
Because I think KJ Hamler, I think he's a
Penn State receiver. He is very fast.
He is blazing fast. Yeah, he's very good. So
I think they clocked him at a 4.32. At one of their like one of their training days, they were running 40s. Uh-huh. He ran a 4.32. I think I read. Insane. You could see his speed on the field too when he catches like a quick vertical route or a quick slant, and he just turns it up. He is off to the races, and he will outbeat. He will outrun anyone.
All right, so Matt, you want to give the answer that I gave you?
Let me pull up the text message that you sent me because I honestly didn't do any research into this question. This is like the only question I didn't do any research into, to be completely honest.
This was a tough question though.
I was a little busy. So I can't even find your answer, but I know it was Auburn.
It was Auburn and Alabama.
No, I said Auburn because they have Anthony Schwartz and he's one of the fastest people in the world. So him being on the team, even if everyone else is a bunch of slow, you know, SEC, you know, grit guys.
Gumbo grit guys.
Yeah.
All right, so our next question. What group of five team do you see making it to the New Year's Six Bowls? Give at least three or four contenders. John, start us off because you're a big mid-major guy.
UCF and UAB. That's pretty much it. I thought about Middle Tennessee for a little while, and then I thought a little more about it, and I was like, no, they're not good enough.
Blue Raiders.
Yeah, I don't have them doing that. While we're on this question real quick, since you guys probably don't have much for this one anyway.
I have four, right, buddy?
All right, well, you can go first. I was going to say we should get to our rivalry thing.
We'll get to that at the end.
All right, cool.
All right, so I think Cincinnati has another good year. Same conference, I think Central Florida also has another good year. Until they prove me wrong, I think they're going to win 9 or 10 games. I think Utah State bounces back, has another good year in the Mountain West. And I think Boise State also has a very good year. So those are pretty four probable teams of the group of five. UAB also was a very good pick on your hand. That's a good call by you.
Thank you.
Mike, what's your group? Mike, let's hear it.
So my big sleeper team would be Houston. They got some talent over there, obviously. But
yeah, insert fart noise.
I think they can turn something up. I like Boise State. That was a good call on your part, Matt. And another sleeper team I have, other than UCF, obviously. Uh-huh. Sleeper team I got is Hawaii.
Oh, you're so dumb.
Hawaii didn't make one. No, did they make one last year?
Oh, yeah. A New Year's Six Bowl? No.
Not
New
Year's Six.
Never mind. Never mind.
Oh my god.
I meant the bowl game in general.
Oh, I know what you meant, but
yeah, but definitely not New Year's Six. I actually forgot.
You mean a New York Six, right?
Yeah, New York Six Bowl. They're actually all played in New York. All right, so we got our second to last question. Why is the SEC head and shoulders above the rest of the country? Now, that's an opinion question. That's an opinion. So we're going to keep it unbiased. I mean, they are.
They're not. My answer in my notes actually just says they're not. And then it has the score from the Clemson-Alabama game.
That's okay. A tough one.
Here's how I would counter that. I think that when you take the top tier SEC teams, they match up very well against every other conference's top tier teams. But when you look at the bottom tier programs, I think the worst teams in the SEC are better than every other conference's worst two teams. Yes, you can't even tell
me. So you're talking about like Missouri is one of them. Tennessee. Vanderbilt.
Let me just look at home. SEC football standings. Let me pull it up. Like
you got to be talking about Missouri and Vanderbilt.
We'll do this. We'll go. The worst two teams in the ACC last year were Duke.
But Duke had a quarterback who's like
Giants.
Yeah, he's going to be the best guy in the NFL, apparently.
I don't want to talk about it.
And I think that Missouri would beat either one of those teams. They definitely would beat Virginia, and so would Mississippi. Ole Miss. And, like, South Carolina was 3-5 in conference and was still in a bowl game. Like, there was
I just don't think they're that much better. Like
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of 14, I think, SEC teams made bowl games.
Yeah, I don't think so.
For me, like, SEC, they are a very good conference, as you guys have already pointed out. Obviously, Clemson out of the ACC is top-notch program. No arguing that. But the Big Ten does have some quality teams in Ohio State.
Yeah, Michigan. But they still have Rutgers and Illinois.
Okay, but you're still looking at quality top-tier teams.
There's three quality programs in the Big Ten. Like,
yes, you have Ohio State. You have Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State.
Yeah,
you can sometimes throw Michigan State in there as well. They're a very hot and cold team. You can throw sometimes Wisconsin in there, because remember a couple of years ago Wisconsin got all the way up to number 4 in the nation.
I'm with them. That's what I don't.
So the Big Ten has some top tier teams, but as you look at their bottom tier teams, yeah, you look at Maryland, Rutgers, Illinois. You look at these bottom tier teams, and they're not that good. But every conference has these bottom tier teams where everyone just smacks.
Yeah,
I think Georgia matches up with every single one of those teams you just mentioned. Nah, well,
that's not true.
I think Georgia Alabama
lost to Texas.
Alabama, yeah, but Texas is back. Alabama matches up well. LSU matches up well. Ohio State?
Yeah.
Ohio State will blow the doors off of who?
Texas.
I don't agree. I don't think
Michigan had the number 2 defense in the country, and they gave up 60 plus to Ohio State.
Yeah, that's because they didn't know how to defend a slant route.
Okay, but Texas is in the Big 12. They don't play any defense. They can't defend any route.
So, Matt, are you confirming that Texas is back?
I think that's what he's saying.
I've answered it 4 here. Times, but but my original point still stands. The middle tier.
Nah, it doesn't.
The middle tier SEC teams are years better than middle tier every other conference teams.
We're not talking about middle tier teams. We're just talking about like these top guns in each conference.
I still think
because these top SEC guns. Because if you look at the question, head and shoulders, head and shoulders. That's the top part of your body, bud. So we're talking about the top part of each conference.
That was a good connection. I'll give you that.
Plus all right, one. This last question, we kind of answered it already, so I'm just going to skip
it. You're all wrong. I'll tell you that much.
Let's skip this last question because we kind of answered it with the mid-major thing.
Yeah.
So I think wish our best rivalry and the best reply to those tweets.
Okay, so I have two because one of them is contingent. So the first one is Army-Navy. And that surprisingly didn't get a lot of answers in the replies. I think that Army-Navy is one of the best rivalries because of, you know, the history behind it. it's like an all around fun game. They do like the returning of the troops or whatever type thing is with the guys from the opposing school. They play it at the Link when it's up here, and it sells out.
It sells out in like 20 minutes once the tickets are posted. Those tickets are gone.
But then my second rivalry, the contingent game, is the Iron Bowl.
Oh my god, dude! What do you? You're like the Paul Feinbaum, dude. Like,
dude, I love when the Iron Bowl is for something. There's no way that there's a better game than that.
Auburn not shitting the bed, like.
Yeah, okay.
There's no better college football ending to a game other than that one Iron Bowl where Chris Davis returned that missed field goal. Yes.
Come on, it's the best conference in football.
Phenomenal.
Okay, so for me, I have Ohio State Michigan. It's called the game for a reason because it's the only game that matters.
That's the only game that matters.
Yep, that's actually the only game that week that matters.
That's wrong.
It is wrong, but it sounds good when I said it, so. I think Oklahoma, Texas also in recent years has produced some very interesting games.
Yeah, so, I'll give you that.
For me, the biggest rivalry, like Matt said, it's Army-Navy.